allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers? Know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
Sinners, choosers, and hypocrites from all around the world, welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe, and I'm really excited to have you tuning in this week. If this is your first time, you should know that this is not a show about promoting religion. It's not about shitting on religion. It's just an honest exploration of where we came from. For me, it's a Presbyterian minister's son. Where we've been. For me, all over the fucking map. And where we're going. I have no idea. And some weeks, we rage against the machine. Other weeks, we say, "Hey, you know what? That machine ain't so bad." And not only that, every week, if my guest doesn't have a religion that they subscribe to, I help them make their own new one. And I'm really excited to have my guest this week. It's a real honor to have the legendary UCB teacher, Will Hines. And he just came out with a new book called How to Be the Greatest Improviser on Earth. It's a culmination of all his collected wisdom over the years from UCB New York and UCB LA. If you're into improv at all, I highly recommend you go to improvnonsense.com, buy a copy of his book. And a couple months ago, I had the great pleasure of taking a class from Will, and I can tell you firsthand that he is an amazing teacher. And a big part of that is that his teaching style, it's not harsh, but it's a commitment to honesty and truth and telling you how he sees it, and a commitment to rationality. And I want to thank him for coming on the podcast and bringing all of those same things to this episode. And I want to thank him for being open about his experiences with the AA, sobriety, which I also have some shared background with that. And I do hope if you're listening, and I'm not saying this is everybody that drinks at all. In fact, I'm not completely abstinent from drinking, but I did have my problems, and it took me too long to swallow my pride and get help, but I did, and I'm so thankful for that. And if you are having problems, which maybe all it is there's a tiny voice inside you saying, maybe I should think about this. Maybe you should think about it. But there's certainly no morality or judgment involved. So that's that. I hope you like the episode. I hope it does something for you. If you do like the episode, you can go to chooseyourownreligion.com, find old episodes there. You can also go on Facebook and find the page there. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and yes, Windows Phone. And if you do have a Windows Phone, you have the chance to be maybe the second Windows Phone subscriber we have. And so take advantage of that opportunity. And lastly, one final announcement that I'm so excited to announce. If you're in Los Angeles and you just weren't seeing enough live comedy, boy, do I have an opportunity for you. Every Monday at 8:30, me, along with my co-producer of this podcast, Ryan Middledorf, are going to be hosting a weekly comedy show at the Copperstill Bar. And it's free. It's called Reviewer. We're going to have improv, and I'll be doing stand-up and having lots of my stand-up friends on. Me and Ryan, we got some great taste in comedy. We're going to put on some kick-ass shows. They're going to be great lineups. I hope to see y'all out at some point. Cool. So, now to the business. It's out of the way. Let's reach stillness, center our minds, and let a little Jah into your heart. Be called Improv Nonsense after your blog?
No, it's going to be called How to Be the Greatest Improviser on Earth.
Oh,
but
cool.
It's because I just think that's a funny title. Like, right. There's no way a book can fulfill that promise, not for more than one person. I don't have like a nice, neat take where I can just be like, you know, acting truthfully, you know, or like heightened slowly or something like that.
Right.
It's just like I have this improv blog. And it's a collection of my favorite things from that, but like rewritten and reworked and then gaps filled in.
Uh-huh.
You know, once I lined it all up together, it's like, oh, this is an area I didn't talk a lot about. Or here's an area that I actually disagree with what I wrote before.
Yeah.
So, but it's still just a bunch of advice, and it's very much only for people who do it. Like, if you're, like, someone who's never done improv, you pick it up, you'd be like, this is useless. And I'd be like, you're right, it is. For you, it is.
Yeah.
It assumes you've done it a little bit. It's, yeah. I'm really aiming at, like, improv, like, if you've taken, like, 3 classes.
Okay, yeah.
And you like it, this is the book for you.
Yeah.
You know? Much more than that, maybe it's redundant. Less than that, you don't know enough to care.
Yeah.
Although I did try to write it. Theoretically, you could read it if you didn't know any improv. Like, there is a lot about just, like, mental habits and stuff, but...
Yeah, one thing I like about your blog, because I've read your blog.
Thank you.
Great.
Improvnonsense.tumblr.com. Check it out. Anybody?
Everybody. I like that you go into almost like the social aspect like of improv sometimes, like not even just gameplay, but like, you know, for those of us who potentially might fall somewhere on the spectrum, who like need some social
Do you think stuff. That's true about you?
I don't think it's necessarily true about me. Sometimes I wonder about it.
You said it in a way that I thought maybe you meant you.
I'm not diagnosed, if so. But, you know.
I feel that way about myself. Like, I definitely feel, I relate to spectrum-y behavior at the very least. I mean, I guess it's one of those terms that, like, I feel like the word sociopath and the word spectrum-y both get thrown around a huge amount.
Yeah.
And, like, their actual clinical definitions are probably something way more...
Right.
Demanding than the when like, you know, somebody dates 2 people in a year and it's like, what is sociopath? It's like, well, not yet. I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, they do sort of capture something about people's behavior. And spectrum-y, like I get pretty mechanical about my thinking and formal and literal.
Yeah.
And I listen to the actual words that people use over the kind of like nonverbal information.
Yeah.
And it lends itself well to being a comedian, but it doesn't lend itself well to being like a cool, you know, small talker at a wedding.
Totally. Yeah. Because I think it's, you know, as somebody who, you know, especially when I'm like writing stand up and I'm in that mode, you're like trying to challenge.
How much stand up have you been? Give me your stand up story.
I've been doing it 5 years.
Nice.
I started in North Carolina like about 6 months.
Which part?
Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Goodnight's the club there.
Okay.
And, my first set went really well, and then I bombed my next, like, 10.
Oh, really?
Just totally ate shit. but, like, it was that Chasing the Dragon of the first one.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, there's a lot of, like, different elements that I liked about it. Because I'm, like, 50-50 introvert, extrovert, so it kind of fed my kind of introverted, like, writing.
Yeah, it's probably a good mix for it.
Yeah.
You get to set stuff, you controlling the whole show.
Yeah.
That appeals to an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of on your terms. Mm-hmm. But extrovert, you know, you're vulnerable and being watched and you have to, you know, you're performing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think one thing I've heard, I don't know if this is true or if it, like one time I said this to a therapist and I was like, as I was saying it, I'm like, I don't know if like I'm really out of my element, whether this is actually true or not. But that introverts might have an easier time dealing. I deal well with like one-on-one talks and then I deal well with like an audience because then it's like in a way the audience has become one entity.
Yeah.
But it's like groups of 4-5 that I struggle in.
Oh, yeah. Me too. That's the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. My worst for me are UCB parties.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've taught at UCB forever, like since 2004 and on both coasts. I've been on here for like 2.5 years and really involved. And I love it. I love UCB. But I know a lot of people in every arm of this organization. And so when I go to a UCB party, I'll know a lot of people, but not necessarily that well.
Right.
You know, it'll be a lot of like students that I've had at some point or definitely recognize their face, can't quite come up with their name.
Yeah.
Although I try to be good at names, but I'm getting worse at it in recent years. Maybe I've just accumulated too many. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and even then like performers who I know, but I don't know super well. And then there are people I know very well.
Yeah.
And there's also people that I used to know very well, but maybe haven't seen in a while.
Yeah.
And so it's just a ton of stress.
Mm-hmm.
Every eye contact that I make, my brain engages in a data recall emotional adjustment, and it's exhausting.
Yeah.
And I don't last long.
I totally relate to that.
I got to get out. Like the New Year's Eve party this year, although I thought it was really organized well and was like good people win and it seemed like a good party, I had trouble enjoying it just because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I danced, and I don't even necessarily love dancing, but then I could just dance and not talk to people.
Yeah.
Like I could just do that. I don't drink. Like I quit drinking almost 3.5 years ago, and that used to be a thing to do at a party, would just be sort of like drink yourself into not caring.
Yeah.
you know, or, you know, drink either enough just to be not self-conscious or maybe a little bit more and be silly and maybe even a little bit more and really not be paying attention.
Yeah.
But I don't do that anymore. So it's like dancing was a good alternative.
Yeah. I have no idea how my parents do it because they've been like teetotalers their whole life. And
really?
But my dad is a pastor, so he's very
social. What denomination?
Presbyterian.
Uh-huh.
It's a pretty like liberal Christian.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah. Pretty.
That's
like,
what that one is?
Yeah. We're like close.
I grew up Methodist.
They're pretty similar to Methodist.
Yeah.
I think they're like cousins. Kind yeah. of like theologically.
Kind of came about at the same time maybe in same sort yeah. of New England Spartan, like functional, let's not get fancy about it. These Catholics with all their rituals, let's keep it simple kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah. We've had like women ministers for like 50 years. Rad. Type thing. But yeah, they're like very social. My dad's always been like able to like get out and about at parties. I'm like, how have you done that without alcohol? Like
yeah.
all these years.
Well, if you've never done it, I think that helps.
Definitely.
If you're just, because even in the last 3.5 years, like I'm accustomed to it. Mm-hmm. I certainly still feel awkward at parties, but like I'm generally speaking, I don't even think about getting a drink.
Yeah.
And when I first quit drinking, that's all I thought about. I was just like really used to it as a way in.
Yeah. Same here. Yeah.
And, yeah, so maybe it's easier if you've never started. Like, I've never smoked either. I've never had cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've never even had a tobacco cigarette once. Mm-hmm. I've smoked pot, but not even a ton of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't miss cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm, you know, I, like, drink coffee pretty, like, obsessively.
Uh-huh.
And I drink and eat kind of quickly and sort of, like, and I have, like, and I chew gum and I'm sort of
yeah.
fidgety. You know, kind of a compulsive-ish behavior. So I feel like if I had ever had a cigarette, it would have been over.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, quitting drinking was hard. It took, like, effort.
Yeah, I quit drinking. I guess I quit it for good one time.
Yeah.
A couple years ago when I was, like, I was, by all definitions, an alcoholic.
Uh-huh.
Like, just drinking every day. Uh-huh. Like, had it in my car if in case I needed it before a stand-up set. Like,
oh, yeah, right.
Just bad shit.
Well, that is, I would agree that that's, like, severe, but I don't think it's that uncommon.
Probably not.
I don't think it's that, I think there's lots of people, I quit drinking and I went to, like, AA meetings and I did, like, 12-step stuff and I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Although, it's just, like, improv to me. I love improv. But if somebody ever came up to me and said, like, I hate improv. Improv drives me nuts. I'm like, I get it. You know what I mean? And I love ECB.
Yeah,
and if anybody's
yeah.
like, I took classes ECB. It's not for me. I totally get it.
Yeah.
I can see shortcomings and flaws, you know, no. And same thing with AA. Like, for me, I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But not even as much as, I'm not even as hardcore as some people. Some people are like, that's their jam.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big part of their life and their society and they love it. And that was never true for me. But I did really connect with a lot of the things that were said. It worked for me in a lot of ways,
mm-hmm.
especially in the beginning. I was grateful for it. But I've had friends who are like, I hate AA, and they like rip it apart. And I never want to argue with them. I'm like, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Doesn't like, have to be a competition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But one of the things is the definition of alcoholism. Yeah, I'm used to be a computer programmer, and I love trying to pick apart how things work.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that AA works is really interesting to me. Like the when it works, the ways that it works. Did you ever do it?
I went to one meeting. I did a couple of meetings of the SMART program. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
SmartRecovery.org.
No.
It's like a secular alternative to AA. It's not, they're not a like.
That seems smart.
Yeah, they're not.
because the religious aspect is a huge thing that bothers people.
Definitely.
And keeps people out and bothers them, and so that seems like a smart thing to try.
It was, and that was a big impediment for me at the time. This is a couple years ago now, and I had a lot of still religious hangups, and it's like it's more focused on like cognitive CBT, like cognitive behavioral therapy type techniques, and
interesting.
It's a great program, but I did go to one AA meeting just to see what it's
sure,
about.
Sure, yeah,
and I liked it. Again, it was one of those things where I was like, it's probably not my thing.
Yeah. You were right to follow that instinct.
Yeah. But I needed something for sure.
Yeah. You know, there was an AA location in New York City. I was in New York City when I did all this, and I went to a lot of meetings in New York, and there's like a shit ton of places in New York City. It's like hilarious.
It's like the open mic scene probably.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing I thought was funny is most AA meetings would just naturally be near a bar just because there's also a ton of bars.
Right.
And it started seeming to me that the people in any particular AA meeting were exactly the kind of people who would have been in that bar. Mm. Like, if it was like in a, and this is probably more coincidence, but it was funny to think about. Like, if you were like in the Upper West Side, like in a rich neighborhood, you know, where there's lots of like families and people like, who write the New Yorker.
Oyster bars and like.
Yeah. If you go to an AA meeting there, it's like people with like with sweaters and like J. Crew clothes and refined, you know, stylish glasses and tweed jackets. And if you went to like a part of Astoria, you know, which is part of Queens, which is a little more blue collar Greek neighborhood, it'd be like guys like in A-frame white t-shirts being like, I used to work down at the docks. You know? That was pretty funny, I thought.
Was it?
But one of the meetings in New York had a sign on the wall that said, there's no wrong way to get sober. And I was like, yeah, whatever makes you take care of yourself better, to whatever degree, you got to get Buddhist about it. You got to like let everybody be on their own path.
Totally. Was the was the higher power aspect a hang up for you, or was it a problem for you?
Yes, a little bit, but I really appreciate, you know, people who don't know, like, although this is pretty famous, the phrase in AA is like higher power as a, oh God, I forgot it, as it makes sense to you, as you understand it.
As you understand it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's very much like whatever you think of as God.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a Christian God or whatever, Jewish God or Muslim God or some kind of weird mishmash hippie.
Yeah.
Could be just, I saw one person who said his higher power was gravity, that he just believed in the powers of physics and science. He didn't really believe, and that was his higher power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all cool. So that made it okay for me.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, okay, if I'm allowed to define that part, then I don't have to leave.
Mm-hmm. Just a force greater than yourself.
Yeah, I kind of understood that. It was the basic approach is you need to not think that you're the whole world, good and bad. Like, you are not as bad as you think you are, and nor are you as awesome as you sometimes think you are.
Yeah.
And part of that is feeling like you're part of something greater that's not in your control.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it. I got that. I was like, I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, so I didn't have a problem with it. And also, AA is run by, in my experience, some of the least ambitious and lazy people in the world. Like, they're not going to aggressively, I'm sure there's lots of exceptions to this, so many people in AA, but in my experience, I never had anybody be that pushy with me.
Mm-hmm.
There was just never anybody who was preaching that hard to me in any way.
Yeah.
It was like, I mean, they loved AA. They wanted me to come back. But if I didn't come back, nobody bothered me.
Yeah, nobody's hitting you up.
Yeah. And they don't know what my last name, but they couldn't find me if they wanted, you know? And they weren't the kind of people who would work that hard at it.
Right.
And again, in my experience.
Yeah.
And so I was cool with hearing it out, you know? And then that didn't even seem to me to be the most important part. For some people, that is like the main way that it works, is you like get with God, get right with God, and get yourself right.
Yeah.
That is a major way that a lot of people connect to AA and just like the world.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't mine. I was more like, give me a practical system I can follow that'll stop me from fucking up my life. Just give me a simple set of rules that if I follow them, I really decrease the percentages of me doing anything stupid.
Yeah. So
you know?
Yeah.
Like, don't drink, go to a meeting once a day, i.e. sit still and listen to other people talk about their lives for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
No money required. Be aware of your own self-pity and resentment and just try to back off of those, but don't be mad at yourself. All of it, I loved that, the practical aspect of it.
Yeah.
Is what connected with me.
Did you have, like, because I definitely had a some breaking points for me. I guess some people call them rock bottoms or whatever. Wasn't even like my, the one that got me to quit wasn't the technical, like the worst part.
Yeah, me
part
either.
Of it,
me either.
But it was like me our either. Final fucking straw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one that did it for me was my dad had drank too much. He was a drunk. Kind man, but like just checked out of life for a long time. So I had that in my head that like drinking's bad news.
Right.
And as I got older in life and I was drinking more and more, I really don't think my friends, I don't think so that they would have said I was like an alcoholic, or they would have identified that as a.
Yeah.
Well, okay, here's the thing. You know, you were saying like how, oh yeah, I identified in any way that you would have called an alcoholic, like you were drinking every day and you had like the whole. I just never agree with any system that's so binary, like one or zero.
Yeah.
Like you're a total alcoholic or you don't have a problem. Like I don't buy it. Like I think that there is a scale.
Totally.
And there are people who are more sensitive to it and worse than me, and people who are better than me.
Yeah.
Whatever the right word is. Like
more skilled at it.
Yeah, like the program AA is designed for the worst people, like the biggest problems. It is designed to get someone who is like, it's bad.
Yeah.
It is just like as bad as it can get. The program is going after them.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that if you're someone who's maybe not having that degree, you probably weren't, you're probably pretty functional and still getting by.
Yeah, my friends were the same way. I've talked to them since and they're like, oh, we didn't think you were.
For me, it was much more internal. Like I hated myself. I was feeling very angry. I was very self-obsessed, and I knew that it was bad.
Yeah.
not just morally bad. Like, I knew that it was impractical and dumb, and I just could not get out of my own ass.
That tiny little voice, at least for me, it was, like, speaking to me. Like, it's just, you know, I'm, like, flouting.
Yeah.
I forget which one is the appropriate usage of those. There's a flout or flaunt difference. Somebody's going to...
Flout or flaunt? Well, tell me what he was doing, and I'll tell you what the verb was.
Just... hearing my inner voice,
yeah,
that like this is not you should quit.
Oh, like your conscience, like
I guess so.
Okay,
sure.
Like a healthy voice.
Yeah. I mean,
was he scolding and angry?
Well, that was the one where it's like just the tiniest voice of being like, just stop. Like,
yeah.
Just stop, man. And I would a while I flouted or flaunted.
Oh, I see what you're saying now. You God, I can't think of it either.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't really matter.
You defied it,
right?
But I can't think of the right word.
Yeah, and then eventually I just had. Because I was drinking before every set,
uh-huh.
And I was visiting somebody. I was in a long-distance relationship and in Austin, and I just remember, like, I visited her, and it was like, I'm just doing one set down there, and I just drank too much. It was a sloppy set. I totally bombed, and I was like, I just can't let that fucking happen.
And that's what it was for you that stopped? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, whatever it is that makes you start living better, it's great.
Yeah, but I totally agree that I couldn't agree with the binary definition of alcoholic or not, and I thought that
I still don't like. I've gone to these meetings. I still go to meetings, and I like him, and I'm just able to compartmentalize it. I'm able to shut up and just do what the steps are.
Yeah,
I'll just do them. What is it? Because none of them are that crazy to me, at least. They're all just like sort of mental exercises. I'm like, I'll do it. What do you got? And then sometimes I step aside, and they call it being in the debating society. That's a term they use in AA meetings.
Oh, yeah? Like, I haven't heard that.
They tell you, like, drop out of the debating society. Like, stop trying to quibble over every little thing that's wrong with our program and just do it. Because all we're telling you to do is stop drinking, go to a meeting, and, like, meditate.
Yeah.
Like, is it really, can you just maybe just do it? Like, if you don't like to do it, you can stop.
Yeah.
And you'll be fine. We're not asking you to give us tons of money. We're not asking you to, like, you know, carve anything weird into your body or hurt anybody.
Yeah. It works if you work it.
And now that you've realized that, stop thinking about it.
Right. I mean,
I can't help it. Like, I still would like debate it in my head. And I'm like, I don't agree that I don't agree with the medical definition that alcoholism is a physical disease. That doesn't ring true to me.
Yeah.
But I do believe that thinking of it that way helps you make the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think there's literally a chemical that happens. Actually, I don't even know why I think that, because I don't know. I'm not a fucking scientist. But if you think of it that way, so that you think, well, I can't even have a drop because it'll activate some weird chemical in me. You know what? That's good. Think of it that way.
Yeah.
And forgive yourself. Don't be mad at yourself about it. Like, pretend as if it was just like this disease you had that you didn't give yourself.
Yeah.
So that you're not mad at yourself. So you can lower the shame factor. Like, it's an ingenious metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't think it's actually true to call alcoholism a disease. But like, I would always just be like, well, what behavior is that trying to elicit from me? It's trying to get me to, like, just not have even a drop and not be mad at myself about it. I love it.
Yeah.
Why am I going to sit here and get into an argument with a guy in Astoria, Queens about whether or not it's a real disease? What does it matter?
Right.
You know? And if he wants me to say God, and when I say God, I don't think of your typical Christian deity, and I think of more this thing I don't understand, just a larger universe.
Yeah.
Cool. You know, I don't have to get into it with somebody.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, the focusing on the utility of it, and what is it trying to get at, I think of that, I've started to come around to that with religion a lot, too. Like, there's a lot of the stuff and a lot of the symbology, I think, it is, for me, I take it at a symbolic level of, like, whether it's, I mean, Christianity is the most common, the most familiar I am with.
Yeah.
I've studied all of them. I've studied every single one.
You've studied every religion possible.
Yeah.
You've gone through them all.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. It's a lot. You'd spend a long time.
Yeah. I don't know, but like the idea of like.
But you do have a lot of books here on like philosophy and thinking. So you have like, you have What did you major in college? And you say
I was religious studies in
college. So yeah, you have exposed yourself to a lot of stuff.
I've dabbled in all of the major ones to various degrees. Some I mean I haven't read all of the Quran, for instance.
It's a lot.
But there's certain things that, as somebody who's gone through kind of more classic angry atheist phases and like questioning agnostic and more like smoking weed, listening to like lectures from Alan Watts and Ram Dass.
Love
like,
Alan Watts.
Yeah.
Ram Dass I've never heard.
Ram Dass, he was, he wrote.
I heard of him, but tell me about it.
He wrote Be Here Now.
Okay.
He was, his original name is Richard Alpert. He was a Harvard professor who was a big part of the LSD kind of movement. He was basically one of the original people that took a ton of it, probably too much, but he basically, and then he, through that, he sort of realized that he wanted to try to be high all the time without LSD.
Uh-huh.
He went to India, kind of like met this guru and fell in love with Eastern religions there. And in the 60s, was one of the main people to sort of bring it back into a Western context.
Yeah.
And he changed his name to Ram Dass, which means servant of God.
Oh.
And now he's a really old. He's a really.
I've seen this book on a lot of cute girls' bookshelves.
Yeah, it's a Be Here Now. It's a trippy read. I mean, it's a bit much, and a lot of like I sometimes hate mentioning the LSD.
How does it compare to Alan Watts? I love Alan Watts too.
Alan Watts, he has more. Well, it depends on which Alan Watts you're talking about, because there's some that are more.
I haven't gone too deep.
Which one have you read?
I've just listened to some YouTube lectures, and I'm embarrassed to say.
Okay, no, that's fine.
Yeah,
but he's like Alan. I think they both blend a lot of different elements of Taoism and Buddhism and Hindu thought together. So they have some commonalities there. I think Alan, well, besides having like a British charm about himself that Ram Dass doesn't have.
Yeah.
I think
His voice is great.
Yeah.
I love the movie Her when they just recreate an Alan Watts entity.
Totally.
When the phones, the operating systems band together and create Alan Watts. I'm like, that's so funny.
I think Alan, he's like, when his lectures, I feel it's more presentational. It seems like very well written, like very like tightly like constructed. I feel like it's very presentational. And not that Ram Dass isn't that way, but sometimes it seems like Ram Dass will like, he'll be more, I guess, Americanized. He'll be more like inserting humor in there and making it more kind of conversational a little bit.
You don't like bringing up the LSD because you think it like discredits him?
I definitely think it does in some people's eyes.
It does to me a little bit. Like I'm always a little suspicious whenever there's any kind of guru. He may not think of himself that way by any stretch, but whenever there's any kind of like, you know, philosophy and there's a person who's articulating it.
Yeah.
As soon as like money, drugs, or sex becomes part of the story, I'm like, I don't know if I can buy it.
Yeah.
Like if you just got laid a lot after you did this, or if you made a shit ton of money, or if you like you're on drugs all the time, it's like you may have, I don't know. It does lessen the credibility.
For sure. And to his credit, he doesn't preach doing drugs and I mean,
I've heard a lot of people who I really respect laud him. So it's a very small grain of salt that came up. Oh. Also at that time, it's a different time.
Yeah. And I mean, hell, I still have those same grain of salts too.
Yeah.
And as somebody who's, I mean, it's been years, but has enjoyed mushrooms and enjoyed LSD myself.
I can't believe any religious text. I know this is sort of like junior high school or high school self-appointed intellectual point of view, but like I can't buy the Bible or any holy book. Like they're just so transparently written by people.
Yeah.
And they're filled with magic stories that can't be true.
Right.
And I just can't ascribe anything more than inspirational stories to it.
Yeah.
Fables.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I know that, and it's also very cool with me if other people feel differently. I believe strongly in that. The same thing I like about my experience in AA, I try to have in real life, which is like, hey, man, if you connect hard to this book and it's working for you, I'm not going to get in your way.
Yeah.
But I can't.
I
certainly, in a political level, it drives me insane when like people and heads of state try to like use a religious text to give themselves credibility. It's like the grossest thing I've ever seen.
Totally, totally. I mean, I have long since foregone the literal truth, like believing in any kind of literal truth of the Bible. And I still, there's a lot of it where it's, because I studied it, like I took it like a a semester each on Old and New Testament in college. Uh-huh. And that was,
that must have been cool.
Well, that, and that was the start of my disillusionment period from Christianity, because I was pretty into Christianity up until that point.
Okay.
But then it was through realizing, like, oh, a lot of this was super politically constructed.
Yeah, I read, I listened to a lecture series Yale releases, like, courses or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a chip in my shoulder about not going to a better college, so sometimes I'll listen to, like, I just because it's an Ivy League thing, I'll listen to MIT or Yale courses just because I am status obsessed in that way, I suppose. They're also, they
they're
also
free.
Are really good, and they're free, yeah.
Yeah.
And I listened to one that was the history of the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And it was as a historical text. They weren't getting into religious stuff,
right?
Or preaching. It was just like, when do we think this is written? Who do we think wrote it?
Right.
What do we think their agenda might have been based on what's said? And of course, they're guessing.
Yep.
But they use their tools as analyzers of historical texts, and they apply that to the New Testament. And they talk about books that were left out,
mm-hmm.
and when they got dropped out. And it was a fascinating lecture series, really fun.
Yeah.
And it definitely, by the end of it, made me think, like, oh, it's not real.
Yeah, that was totally, that exact same approach was what I had in college. Professor Dr. Bart Ehrman is a great, I guess, historian, he's not really a theologian, but he had an interesting personal, and he's a charismatic guy.
Uh-huh.
He had been like an evangelical youth pastor.
Yeah.
But then, like, through studying more and more at Wheaton College, which is a very religious Chicago seminary, then he became disillusioned too. And so, yeah, he approaches it completely historical, but he doesn't take a stance either way either of, like, you don't have to, like, you can believe this or not, but this is just what the evidence.
Yeah, that's what this course
to.
Was like.
Yeah, and like there's things like how the most recent of the Gospels, because there are four Gospels.
Yeah, it's Luke, right? Oh, John is the most recent.
I can't even.
Mark is the earliest.
Yeah.
Because Mark there's no resurrection in Mark.
Right.
Mark, he's gone.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't disappear into the sky. Like, he's crucified,
mm-hmm.
and I think it ends
mm-hmm.
shortly after that. I think the apostles have like a little powwow, and they're like, well,
I don't know.
Mark has the least crazy stuff in it.
Yeah. And like,
it's also the shortest.
And
then the Matthew is the one with all the story. Well, I can't remember what the most recent one is. Isn't it?
Yeah, I can't
I know what it is.
Straight.
Luke and the Acts of the Apostles are like the same author.
Right, right.
One is a continuation of the other very directly.
Right.
But then John is like the trippiest one.
He's the, like, the apocalypse is happening right now.
Yeah.
type dude.
Right.
He was like, yeah, his is the one that opens, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God.
Yeah, yeah, he gets right into it.
Yeah, which to me, that's the aspect that is, like, I connect the most with. Like, it is, like, kind of psychedelic.
You love that part?
Yeah, because I think...
He was the most Alan Wattsy of the apostles.
Yeah.
They don't even know that the apostles wrote it, though, right? Like, those names are ascribed after the fact.
Well, that's just the thing. It's, like, the most recent of the Gospels is written 30 years after Jesus, like, when they supposedly died.
Yeah, and that's the oldest one.
Or that's like the most, that would have been the soonest after his death.
Yes.
I don't know how we're phrasing it. But like, so.
Right.
So
that's what I meant.
So my professor would phrase it as like, imagine if the first thing you ever read or ever written about Watergate was released like today.
Yeah.
Like, how accurate would you think it would be?
Yeah.
Like, would it have all the dates exactly right? Would it have all the quotes exactly right?
Right.
Probably not.
Right.
So yeah, I totally.
Yeah. If somebody was like, wrote the biography of. Or like the story of the Beatles.
Right.
But they didn't write anything down until the year 2000, and they were going on memory.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful experience, and they knew all the people involved.
Yeah.
They'd be wrong all over the place.
Yeah. But I still, there's something about like Jesus being essentially a Jewish mystic in that he didn't believe necessarily in the literalism of Judaism of his day. Like, I think and this is all my own personal beliefs cobbled together from like approximations of like what all the Gospels say about him and what probably didn't happen, what he might have actually been trying to get at. I think he was like, it's cool to like honor your religious upbringing. It's cool to like do the ceremonies, but you can't make that, you can't worship that. That's not the thing we're trying to get at. We're trying to like, none of that matters. It doesn't matter. Like the temple, like being like a holy, quote unquote, like pure Jew, it doesn't matter. Like it's so pointless. It's so beside the point.
Now you're projecting that onto Jesus though, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I mean, there are things he said and things in the Bible that could support what you're saying.
Sure. Yeah.
But it was never said as directly as you just said it.
No, definitely not.
You're kind of like trying to get a vibe of what he was like based on what the Gospels are and what you know of human nature and what you know of what else would have been such a revolution? What would have rung true, and what would people have repeated to each other?
Right. Yeah. And like maybe, you know, a lot of people would have exaggerated if they're trying to get a political and a big religious movement off the ground. Yeah. You would have made him a messiah. You would have made him like this amazing. Like you would have, I'm not saying it was necessarily a right or good tactic to do that. We're definitely not honest.
Yeah.
But I think that was most likely the tactic.
Yeah, me too. Used.
Like, oh, we're going to like, we need to sell, we need like a Michael Jordan to like sell this new, like this new religion to people.
Yeah. It's so depressing. Like it's sad that just like somebody talk, well, I don't even know if this is true. I'm sad over something that I can't even verify, but like the idea that, oh, can't someone just be talking about peace and love and that sets everybody on fire?
Yeah.
Or is it that a guy was saying like, you know, worship me and we'll kick the Romans out of Israel.
Yeah. I don't think it was that one, though. I mean, based on just of like what his followers would have believed. Like, he never even directly answered, like, yeah, I'm the son of God. Like, I'm the shit. Like, I'm here. Like, you should worship me. He was always kind of like.
Or how about this? Was this the thing that set on fire? Like, your life may suck, period.
Yeah.
But when you die, if you're a good person, you'll go to heaven. Mm-hmm. And the evil people will go to hell. Like, it's all going to be set right after you die.
Maybe.
Is that part of the appeal? Is that what sets people on fire and makes them believe it? They'll be like, justice is coming?
Well, maybe. I don't know if Jesus actually said much about hell at all. There's certainly not much, even in, like, the, considering, like, what people would have said after, like, even what's in there now, there's very little he mentions hell at all. I think his followers certainly would have believed in some of that, and they may have done that as a motivational tool. He definitely, based off of...
I mean, adding on to the story where he floats up into a hole in the sky and goes into heaven is a crazy move.
Yeah. He, from what I've heard from various accounts of this, like, that he would have believed maybe that the apocalypse was coming and that, like, oh, God, like, in 30 years, like, in the very near future.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, everything was going to get wiped out.
That's right. This lecture series I heard, too, referred to him as an apocalyptic prophet.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's all coming to an end soon.
Right.
So get ready,
mm-hmm.
and here's ways to get ready, and it's like, love your neighbor.
Yeah.
You know, the meek shall inherit stuff.
Yeah, but I don't know. For me, a lot of that is just, it is, to me, a lot of surface-level beliefs, they matter less and less to me. It's almost like spiritual materialism in a way.
Uh-huh.
Like needing to believe Jesus literally rose from the dead, or needing to believe anything
about
it.
Yeah, it's the shallowest part.
I mean, I'm fine with everything I just said being 100% bullshit.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Because I certainly don't know. It's just guesses. But at what point did you become, because you grew up Methodist, right?
Yeah, my family wasn't too, my experience was like a family was not too religious. We were like, just like, you know, I don't actually know. We would go to church. My dad, we went to a Catholic church. Mm-hmm. I was baptized Catholic. First communion.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like around the time that I was 10, we started going to a Methodist church. My mother just thought the Catholic churches were a drag,
mm-hmm.
and she liked the Protestants better. So we started going to the Methodist churches. And I liked it a lot better, and I liked the people there, and the minister of that church was a good guy, and mm-hmm. his son was a friend of mine. We knew their family and stuff. And so, like, yeah, I say Methodist because I was closer to that congregation.
Mm-hmm.
But we were never hardcore religious folk. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't pray before we ate.
Mm-hmm.
We did a little while, but not hardcore. It was just, God was never brought up. You know, it wasn't like Jesus is watching or like, what would Jesus do? Or like, do that was never talked about.
Yeah.
So it felt like a pretty secular house that did go to church on Sunday, but it was almost like you go to church because you also vote when elections come around and like you do your job. Like, this is what you're supposed to do.
Right.
Shut up and just do that. Do your homework. Go to church. What do you don't think about it?
Yeah. It's like just cultural background music.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah.
But I was like a thoughtful kid and I liked thinking about, I'd sit there in the service bored and I would open the Bible up and just read it while I was sitting there. So because whatever was going on in the service was insane to me. Not insane, but like pointless.
Yeah.
This song, that, thanking the folk choir for painting whatever house and like, I don't know. I don't even remember what would happen. I would just read the Bible out of boredom.
Right, yeah.
So I read a lot of it and it was cool. I liked the idea of it. I mean, I like the idea of right and wrong being true, like there being a right and wrong in the world. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, pretty young, I was just like, this is obviously bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there's important meanings to be taken from it.
But it wasn't like, it wasn't a lot of strife, it sounds like. Like, it wasn't like a big to-do.
No. Yeah. Like, also my mother died when I was 16, and like, so then that's also just like a, it's like, oh, the world is unfair.
Yeah.
And I don't think she's in heaven. I don't think that she's talking to, I think she's gone. Like, I think that's what happened. I saw it happen. I think that's what happens.
Yeah.
So, and it's just scary. And so we just make ourselves feel better, which I also understand. And I don't begrudge anybody trying to make themselves feel better in any way. But I walked out of high school just pretty cynical about it. Not angry, though. Just sort of like shrugging my shoulders like, I don't have time.
Yeah.
I mean, I also don't think that Spider-Man exists.
Right.
But I love Spider-Man stories.
Yeah.
I believe that good stories have a knack of truth about them, you know, capture something that feels true, any story. And that the Bible is just some of those. They resonate with a lot of people in terms of moral truth.
Yeah.
But it's inconsistent enough that everybody can read their own batshit thoughts into it and find support, which is why you should never allow a holy book to be the final word, because it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's not edited well.
And it's completely out of context to whatever your current, you know, context would be.
Yeah, right. They didn't know what smartphones were going to be doing to people.
Yeah. I'm always, I'm fascinated and always, because honestly, one thing that kind of got me into improv was like, it felt more spiritual sometimes than stand. I have kind of,
acting is, it's more easily seen as like spiritual and philosophical for sure.
Yeah.
Because it's about like being truthful and being present and not thinking ahead and collaborating. So it's a lot more like mental and spiritual habits than like write a good joke.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I think stand-up can also be spiritual because you have to, you know, the audience is vetting whether you're truthful or not. It's in play in a stand-up performance also, but it's more obviously in play in improv.
Totally. Yeah, because some stand-up, I mean, I love a lot of different, like, absurdist stand-up that has nothing to do with anything. But that's where I kind of, it tapped into me was, like, trying to be as honest and as truthful as possible in still a funny way.
Yeah.
And then the improv had that element in terms of, like, you're acting, well, hopefully.
Yeah.
Still a work in progress for me, but...
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I'd say you're an honest improviser.
Well, thanks.
I've seen you do it. I think there is just, like, you know, acting scripted material, I think, has a lot to do with being able to be, like, an instrument of emotion and be able to play a lot of notes that the script needs you to play.
Yeah.
But improv is more just, like, can you be yourself with as little interference as possible. And if the audience thinks you've done that, they like you.
Yeah.
They're like, yep, he's being true to himself.
And as you know,
and saying yes to all the facts.
And listening to your partner. I mean, there's a million things.
It's hard, but like it's still a truth barometer. It's like, oh, that feels genuine and unlabored.
Yeah.
So therefore I like it. And not so much that is impressive and done in a virtuoso way. It's like, nope, that's just true and unlabored.
Yeah.
So I like it.
Is that what kind of, I mean, do you have a sense of spirituality? I mean, is that like where you sort of tap into? I mean, I'm just.
With improv or spirituality? What are we talking about here?
We should pick one. Like when you got into improv.
I got into improv because it felt, I liked improv a lot because, it felt morally good.
Yeah.
It felt like it was making me a better person. Like, I had emotional defenses up that were, like, guarding me from certain feelings and that I used to interact with the world. And improv would basically, like, punish me for having defenses up.
Yeah.
And if I was able to let them down, it rewarded me with laughs.
Yeah.
And then I was able to not have them up in real life as much. Like, it just sort of, you know, you have to get over yourself. You have to give up control. You have to react immediately. You also have to be honest, good and bad.
Yeah.
In a very revealing way.
It's very vulnerable.
And all that stuff was hard to do. It still is not natural for me. But the better I did it, the better my improv would go. And, you know, very early on, I could tell. You know, if your muscle is sore and you massage it, it hurts, but it's also satisfying. You're like, oh, I needed this.
Yeah.
Or you stretch a muscle that's very tight it's uncomfortable, but you know you needed it. Like when I started improv, it was like hitting all my emotional and mental muscles that were tight.
Totally. Yeah.
So I liked it for that reason.
Yeah, both improv and stand-up for me has really stretched, I mean, insanely stretched the amount of emotions I'm comfortable with in myself because it's forced me to.
Yeah.
And that's something, I've been in and out of therapy. I'm not like, I haven't been in it for years and years and years, but I've gone for like a couple month stretches at a time.
Uh-huh.
And now, and
I go once a week.
It's great. I'm shopping around for one right now, actually. Uh-huh. But I think that's one thing. Therapy.
Just like AA, I also think that's not for everybody.
Yeah.
I'm a verbal, anxious person who thinks a lot, and I also like navel gaze a lot. And it's really helpful for me to have a time a week where I can do that unabashedly.
Right.
And I don't feel guilty because I'm paying somebody.
Right.
You know, and they're good at like listening and remembering to what I say.
Yeah.
Like it's, I really enjoy it.
I love it too. And I think it's been vital for me creatively because of that. It helps stretch what I'm comfortable, like the emotions and the aspects of me that I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
And the more, I can't be comfortable putting them on stage if I'm not comfortable with them internally.
Yeah.
At least for me. I don't know if you feel that way.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, stage is like the test.
Yeah.
And however prepared you are for it, it comes out, like however open you are.
Yeah.
Now, you can't just on stage decide to be more open than you were before you got on stage.
Right.
You can't do that.
Because they can feel it a mile away.
Yeah, it just feels fake.
Yeah. Or that it, for me, it's like I'll be too anxious and you'll like,
you can. Yeah,
you
can you're interfering with it too much.
Yeah. Now, do you, I have a guess that, just a pure guess that you don't necessarily, I don't want to put words.
Yeah, go ahead, do it.
That you don't find that to be spiritual per se, or that maybe spiritual is kind of a bullshit word.
You mean improv and stand-up and stuff?
Yeah, or just maybe
this whole thing that we're talking about?
Or just that, is spirituality a bullshit word to you?
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical of it.
Yeah.
I associate it with, like, cop-out, you know, like, oh, I didn't want to pick. But I do it also. I use that word, so I'm suspicious of myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think people use it rather than have an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I do it too, I guess.
It is a nice, easy way to like not offend anybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're like still sound reverent to things like churches, but you're not agreeing that you go to a church.
Right. Yeah. Would you ever? I mean, do you have any kind of like meditation practice or anything?
Yes, I do a very sort of sloppy, simple mindfulness meditation that I just cobble together from apps and reading a book and some essays.
Uh-huh.
Jack Kornfield book, A Path with Heart.
Jack Kornfield. Hey, he's a Ram Dass associate, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Jack Kornfield.
He was part of the they had like this big group in India that was like Ram Dass, Jack Kornfield, Sharon Salzberg's another kind of person from that camp.
I've heard that name.
Yeah, they're all in the same like posse.
Oh, that's
like
interesting.
The UCB of meditation or whatever you call it.
I was going to AA, new to it, like first 6 months. For a year, I did AA a lot. I went like 5 or 6 times a week.
Wow.
Morning meetings, just before I'd go to work. I loved morning meetings.
Mm-hmm.
5 or 6? Let's say 5. I did mostly. And got sober, felt better in many ways. I was really grateful for it. Then I started going less. Now I go like once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people who would say that I do not have what's called a strong program. Like, I'm not an awesome ambassador.
Yeah.
Like, improv-wise, I'm a guy who stopped taking classes. I got an indie group. We do shows, like, every month.
Yeah.
You know? Am I really an improviser? I don't know. I put a lot of time in. You know what I mean? I studied and did it. I'm doing it.
Yeah.
But I'm not in it so hard that I am representative of the way, like, some people are who do it all the time.
Right.
I'm like that for AA.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have some genuine exposure to it. I'm legit, but I'm not real hard into it right now.
I gotcha.
Okay, but like somewhere in like month 10 or something, I went to a meeting that I didn't normally go to, and it was a meditation meeting, and I didn't expect it, and it was like we just sat there in our chairs silently for like 10 minutes, and then everybody did their shares about what was going on with their day, did the normal AA stuff, and I felt great.
Yeah.
And one of the steps is, step 11, which I can't remember the words, but it's something like increasing your conscious contact with God. And it's like either through prayer or meditation or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't into praying because I didn't like any particular deity or church, but meditation felt right.
Yeah.
And then I looked into it and I just I can't remember how I found out about the term mindfulness.
Mm.
But I guess if you just read about meditation, you find it pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah.
And, oh, you know what it was? I was also reading just about happiness. I was just trying to find, like, how to be happier. Mm-hmm. That was a wreck before I could
pick that. No, I've gone down every self-help kind of rabbit hole.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I was just, like, lazily Googling, like, well, how do you be happier? And a lot of these, like, sort of, like, BuzzFeed-ish lists. I would quickly go to, like, Buddhist blogs and all kinds of self-help kind of things. And I read a bunch of your very surface level things that do make you happier. And they all were very similar. They were all were like, there was always practical stuff like get enough sleep, drink good water, eat nice food and don't eat too much of it. Don't drink or drink less. Hang around good people who like you and you like them. And like, yeah. But a lot of them had like meditate. A lot of them had like a moment of peace, pray or meditate.
Yeah.
Like it was on a lot of them.
Yeah.
At the same time that I had gone to this meeting and I was like, I don't know, it sounds right to me. And so I started reading about it, and I started trying to do meditation every morning. I got, like, an app, guided meditations.
Uh-huh.
Diana Winston was the first person I got who I really liked. Just Googled, like, on iTunes, or searched iTunes.
Uh-huh.
Got her. And then Jack Kornfield I found out about shortly after that. And, yeah, just in the mornings, I would try to do 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I've go through phases where I'll do it every morning for like a couple of weeks, and then I won't do it for like a month.
Yep, me too. And then
I'm never a hardcore meditator either. But I, you know, I have meditated a lot, and I like it. And
yeah.
And it chills me. It works. Like it chills you out. In New York City, it was great because I was so stressed by the end of my time in New York, and the subway was driving me crazy. And it was so crowded and loud, and I just was, you know, I was sober like a year and a half before I moved to LA.
Mm-hmm.
And I would meditate in the mornings, and it would make the subway ride better. I would also meditate on long subway rides.
Yeah.
Like, just close my eyes. You know, it's like, well, I'm going to be on, we're stuck, you know, and like, and I've got like 40 minutes before I get to my stop. I'll just like grab this, you know, handrail and just close my eyes and try to be in the moment. And it would be great. It's, it like was, I liked it.
Yeah, I love it. I go through phases of, I'll do it every, I'm currently doing it every day, like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever, however much I can in the morning. But then I'll get cocky and be like, I don't need to now. Like, I'm good.
Right.
And then like a month or 2 months later, like I'm just, something I finally notice, I'm like, oh, I'm getting caught up in all my little stupid
narratives. Exactly.
Yeah.
Man, the very first couple times I did it, it was so, Diana Winston, again, I said was the name I found, and she just, and I don't think there's necessarily anything. I don't even know if she's like a famous person in it or if I just found somebody who has an album.
Mm-hmm.
But they were, you know, hers were very much like about, you know, focusing the breath. It was mindfulness. It was like observe the present moment without judgment.
Right.
You know, so you have to try to not think about the future, think about the past. When you do, though, because it's inevitable that you do, you just try to bring your thinking back to the present, non-punitively.
Yep.
Not being like, you fucking asshole, you fucked up. Just like, oh, there it goes. I think Jack Kornfield has a part where it's like getting a puppy. Like your brain is like a happy puppy.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just scattered and easily distracted. And you wouldn't be like mad at the puppy for being like that. But if you're trying to train the puppy just to sit with you.
Right.
Have that attitude towards your own attention span.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. And yeah, it makes you get less up your ass.
Yeah.
And you worry less about a lot of stuff.
Do you think it has had an effect on your improvising too?
Yes. Definitely made me better. There's like no doubt about it. I mean, like just getting emotion, it was all at once, like quitting drinking, meditating, trying to be happier. That all made it better.
Yeah. It's hard to like.
It probably made my career worse because I got less caught up in trying to be successful, but like.
Right.
But just in terms of my ability to be on stage and be chill was way better.
Yeah.
Also, just like the status of the UCB theater, still to this day, eats at me. But it was bad in a way that I didn't appreciate for a while. Like I just wanted to be seen as awesome by my peers.
Yeah.
In this insular community that almost nobody knows about, really. But I didn't give a shit what I was getting paid to do in my life or what my love life was like. I wanted to get on the UCB stage and have everybody think I was great.
Yeah.
And just those people. And whenever it would happen, I was psyched. And if it didn't happen, I was obsessed. And I still am that way to some degree, but honestly way less. Like I'm able to let that go to a great degree.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just hearing a mirror image of my my relationship with, like, for me, for the first several years out here, it was like the alt stand up scene. Very ecstatic. Like, I was so status obsessed. So
it's hard.
Like,
how can you not be? I mean, there's some mics are better than others. People are more successful than, how can you not compare yourself? You're getting up one at a time and taking a swing at a pitch.
Yep.
And you're watching everybody do it.
Uh-huh. And then you there's certain mics that's like the cool mics where there's like more respected people there. And it's like, why am I not getting booked on this show? Why?
Of course.
It's so maddening. And then one thing, it didn't necessarily cure it, but I remember one comic just saying at an open mic, and he was a pretty well-respected guy in the scenes. He's like, you know, we're all just losers, right? Like, this is so, like, you could sense everybody's getting so caught up. And it's so funny. Like, you go to mics, this is supposed to be comedy. It's supposed to be fun. We're supposed to, having a good time, and everybody's just, like, focused on their set. Everybody's, like, and I'm the guiltiest of that.
Yeah.
Of anybody. And I definitely feel better now, I think. But, I was starting, it's funny, I felt myself, because I took a, there was a bit where I thought I was just going to like not do stand up anymore, and I was just going to do improv. And I felt myself sensing that in the UCB community, just at a totally low, like even so minuscule level.
I think it exists stronger in the lower levels.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think like people who have been put on a house team, it's relieved to a certain degree.
Mm, like that validation.
They got a palpable validation. I mean, certainly they're still massively insecure and comparing themselves and worrying, but
sure. Yeah.
There is, before that happens, or if that doesn't happen, then you have almost no way to measure. You'll almost just want to know. It's hard to even know how you're doing.
Yeah.
And the system has a hierarchy of classes, and there's a hierarchy of shows. It's impossible to not, everybody compares themselves and then finds a way to deal with that.
Totally.
By either letting it go or just managing it or something.
And for a long time, I didn't think there's necessarily anything wrong with thinking of things in that way. Like, no, it's natural to just like want to.
It's definitely natural, yeah. It's definitely easy to do. It's just not productive.
Definitely not. It's like one way I used to think of it. It's like it's materialism of like respect. Like it's like. Like and some people like, especially in the comedy scene, will kind of be like anti-materialist. Like, I'm fine with like a shitty car. I'm fine with like shitty clothes or whatever. Like, that's great. But then they'll be status obsessed. But it's like, to me, it's just the same thing where it's like, you just get greedier. It's your ego is never satisfied.
No, never.
Never, ever. but in meditation definitely helps with that. Just realize, like,
it does. Yeah. Yeah. You get more present and you kind of get more perspective on that stuff just being sort of made up.
Yeah. Well, and Sam Harris in this book, Waking Up, he has a lot about meditation. That he's one of the four horsemen of the atheist apocalypse.
Oh, really?
He's like one of the four big, like him, Richard Dawkins, a couple other guys. But he talks a lot about meditation and how it's like for him, it's sometimes simplified of like between your consciousness and the word I, or any thought that begins with I, there's like, consciousness is the space before you get to I.
Mm.
And it is like just that pure, like infantile, like observing of your environment, just like the non-judgment, the non-attaching any kind of like, and that's what's fascinating to me about consciousness is that they, even though we know the parts scientifically, scientists still don't have an answer of like, what exactly is consciousness? Like, how does it happen from all these like dead, well, for lack of quote unquote, dead, things, how does consciousness, such a living thing, arise?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
That's easy to get tripped out on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's pretty mind-blowing.
So we're about that section of the show. I don't know how much time you have left, but...
I think I'm good. I have an embarrassingly large amount of time right now.
Awesome. We're about at the point where, if you're hip to it, we can make up our own religion.
Oh, yeah. All right. Let's do it.
Cobbled together. Okay. So this, again, a silly or a
you
serious...
You do this every episode?
When people are like actively Christian or something, then I don't ask them to make up a replacement for Christianity.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I just ask
You're not
them,
looking
like,
to make people feel bad.
No. Or forsake their God or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody who's like neutral and wants to. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So again... However, this can be either your personal, your ideal religion, whatever. It's
okay, I'll try to make the correct religion.
Please.
I'll just try to solve religion.
Please do. That's the whole point of this podcast. I'm figuring it all out.
I mean, I don't know how else to go about it. Like, I don't know how else to tackle the problem.
I mean, I already figured out Christianity earlier. So.
Yeah, you already got that solved.
Yeah.
So that's done.
Okay, so first, for this religion, what kind of god structure do we want? Do we want a monotheism? Do we mm-hmm. want like many gods, like a Greek hierarchical kind of system?
Yeah, I would like a polytheism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Greek, like many gods, like more of like an astrology setup. Like uh-huh. there's a small handful of gods. Let's say 12.
Mm-hmm.
A 12 god system.
Good number. Do they specialize in anything?
I just realized I've been talking about a 12-step program this whole podcast, but I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking about the 12 signs of astrology.
Uh-huh.
I really love the comic book Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could talk for a long time about stuff. Don't worry about it. Sandman is a comic book. It's famous, but not necessarily everyone's read it, of course. And it's about an entity who is in charge of dreams. The Dream Lord is mm-hmm. the main character, and most of the stories are just like he's an ancillary character. It's like Twilight Zone. Like somebody's going through some shit, and the Dream Lord gets involved.
Uh-huh.
You know, but the dream in the world of the comics, the Dream Lord is one of a family called the Endless. There's six or seven of them.
Uh-huh.
All their names start with D, and they are like sort of in charge of different aspects of the universe. There's like destiny, death, dream, despair, desire,
uh-huh.
delirium, and destruction.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, that's not a complete list. Like that's not a logically broken out list of aspects.
Yeah.
But it was enough that in almost any story, one of them was in charge.
Uh-huh.
No matter any aspect of human experience, one of the Endless could be said to be in charge in some fashion.
Yeah, we can shoehorn that one into destiny.
Right, right. Like, oh, this is sort of a desire thing.
Yeah.
And I'd have 12 gods. You don't need to have them. It doesn't have to be too systematic. They can be a little helter-skelter, like a little bit like, you know.
Yeah. Lots of Venn diagrams of like overlapping.
Yeah, like they don't all have to be equal.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't have to make sense. Like, we can have one guy who's just in charge of, like, wood. And we don't even know why he's there. But then another one is, like, love. It's like, well, that makes sense.
Awesome.
Polytheism.
Cool. Is there any kind of overarching ethos you would like this religion to get at?
So I'd like to be Buddhist and sort of, the present. Like, the world is just whatever abstract thoughts we put on it.
Mm.
So let's not be too important about our own boxes and categories.
Yeah.
Let's be cool that everybody's got boxes and categories and they are ultimately not there
mm-hmm.
and fluid.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of like present meditation. Do you need like a slogan or something like that?
No, if you have one.
That's what you're looking at. That'd be the best sort of thing. Okay. Okay, so the ethos is sort of like, be in the moment, I guess.
Yeah.
That's the kind of what we're going for.
Cool. Is there any concept of sin in this religion? Is there any kind of rules that are preventing sin? Or are there any things we should or shouldn't do? Like, can we have sex? Can we drink?
The sin is impulse and extremism.
Mm.
Like moderation is the goal or whatever,
the
ideal.
The middle way, as they
say. So you can drink if you're not drinking too much.
Yeah.
You can do drugs if you're not doing too much. Some drugs are hard to do only a little bit, so take that into consideration. But yeah.
You could say that again.
If for some reason that's where you're at, that's okay.
Cool.
Live and let live should be one of the big mantras of this religion.
Uh-huh.
Like, you're not allowed to go into somebody else's house and tell them that they can only drink as much as you want to drink.
Yeah.
That's not cool.
Yeah.
If they are doing it moderately, then they're doing it right. That might be something.
Sweet, sweet. Are there any
I believe in story. Here's the thing about the Bible that I do think is powerful. I mean, the Bible doesn't need me to say it's powerful. It's very powerful. Really successful book. Big book.
Yep.
Very successful book. But stories are powerful. Like, a story is an effective way to get people on the same page. You know, like the story of Abraham Lincoln being born in a log cabin and becoming president going from nothing to the best, to the highest office in the land, is an effective myth about the promise of America.
Yeah.
Like, that's a powerful story that everybody knows. Lincoln was born in a log cabin. Like, everybody knows it. Because it, like, resonates some truth in our head. But we hold it in the story. It mm-hmm. doesn't even matter if we someday find out that Lincoln wasn't born in a log cabin.
Yeah.
The story is true in that it has a true truth in it.
Totally.
Regardless of its accuracy.
Totally.
And there are a lot of stories like that. And so I'm cool with stories not being, I'm cool with making up fantastical fables in my religion if they accurately tell a good, if they tell the right story.
Right. And they're not just a political.
Yeah. You can't use them to get into office.
Right.
So
then do we have a holy text to this?
Yeah, we would have a holy text. It would be like, it would be like a group of fables, but they'd be labeled as fables.
Yeah.
But they're fables about our 12 gods and the adventures they went on in some sort of mythical ancient time.
I like the word adventures there, too.
Yeah,
yeah. It feels cooler.
Quests, and they fucked up, and they're like the Greek gods, and that they, like, fuck people, and they, like, they do things wrong, and they make mistakes. But we learn from their stories.
I do love that about the Greek god. Kind
of you'll just read a story where they're complete assholes to each other.
Yeah, and they kind of realize it. They're like, oh, yeah.
We fucked up.
My bad.
I tied that guy to a mountain for 10,000 years. That was my bad. My bad, bro.
Yeah, they're not trying to, like, they're not trying to say, like, no, it was fine.
Yeah.
Like, no, it was
I turned into a swan and raped that woman.
Wait, is that a really
my bad.
One? Is that a really one?
Oh, yeah. Leda and the swan.
Oh, Jesus.
Zeus turned into a swan and raped Leda.
Oh, man.
And I think gave birth to Helen of Troy.
I need to look more into this.
I might have that wrong, but
I know a lot of shitty, dark Bible stories like that, but I don't know as many of the Greek ones.
Okay, yeah. I mean, there's a lot I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a poem by Yeats.
Mm.
I took poetry classes in college, and he wrote Leda and the Swan as one of his big poems. Okay. And I was like, what's this about? I was like, that's a myth? Why did Zeus bother turning into a bird? Why didn't he just rape her as a man?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
I know that rape is the main part of that story. I'm not trying to sidestep the importance of that, but it's an interesting detail that he turned into a swan and did it.
Yeah.
That's real weird.
Well, there's like one of my favorite stories from the Bible is Elisha and the she-bears, where Elisha was like this prophet that came after Elijah, and he was just like, apparently he was hypersensitive because he was walking down the road between two towns, and so a group of youths made fun of him for being bald. And so he summoned basically two she-bears. They're called she-bears from the woods, and they mauled like 42 children.
This is in the Bible?
It's in the Bible. It's in 2 Kings, I believe.
I love it.
Yeah. You can look, you just Google Elisha and the she-bears and you'll find a million. My favorite part is that I've read some like conservative Christian like trying to defend like why that made theological sense.
Yeah.
It was like, well, we don't know how old the kids were.
Yeah.
And like he was trying to make a point about God.
Our ability as humans to retroactively make things make sense is insanely, is amazing.
We're so good at it.
We're real good at it.
Yeah.
We can explain anything.
It's so
we can't predict anything, but we can explain anything and just believe that we have the good explanation for it.
The masters of rationalization.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we'll have a bunch of stories in a book for sure. What was the last question? Sorry,
that was the last one. Yeah. Cool. Is there any kind of regular, whether it's weekly, monthly, like worship or gathering?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Weekly worship for sure. I think that's a good system.
Is there anything with like, what does it look like with like music or meditation?
We're against money and status.
Okay.
So it's got to reflect that.
Okay.
The church can't be rich looking. It can't look like the church can't be the richest building in town.
Yeah.
It's got to be the church itself has to be living a moral and moderate life.
Have you ever been or heard of like a Quaker meetings?
No.
That's like something I've stumbled upon this past year. A stand-up friend of mine, like he goes to them and he invited me to one. There's one in Pasadena, and it's like they totally model that. Like their whole, it's a meeting house is what they're called. It looks just like a regular like house.
Okay.
It holds maybe 60, 70 people, and it's just like four, like a quadrant of pews all facing each other. And it's an hour of essentially group meditation, but then with anybody can just stand up and start talking at any point they want. With the idea that like everybody has an inner light to share.
Oh, yeah.
I
love AA meetings, and so I would model it after these.
Yeah.
Maybe something similar to that.
It's pretty similar, yeah.
There'd be See, what's another good thing about AA is they have, or in my experience, again, lots of different experiences, not for everybody. For honest to God, it's cool.
Disclaimers.
You never like it. I don't care. But is that there's pretty good, like... rules for running the meeting to stop crazy people from ruining it.
Yeah, you have to have those.
You have to have those because people are crazy and you need boundaries so that they can't ruin the thing.
Yep.
And in the ones I've gone to, it's usually just like everybody gets 3 minutes to talk and you can just talk about whatever. Mm. And if you're crazy and you use the 3 minutes to like espouse totally anti-AA things and you're just jerk and you're rude, everyone is kind of like, well, I'll be done in 3 minutes.
Yeah, that's
there's
great.
No reason to argue with this person.
Right.
Because it'll be over soon.
Yeah.
And most people respect that in the meetings that I've gone to. Yeah, so I would have some kind of like, it'd be like an AA thing. It'd be like everyone shares.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to be honest and you try not to judge each other. And there's a time limit. Something like that. Yeah. And end with a group meditation.
Cool. Any like formal, sometimes like there's like formal spaces to apologize or repent or anything. Do we have any kind of formalized version of that? Or?
Yes, we should. That's a good idea.
Like just, hey, I fucked up. I'm sorry.
I'll have a confession booth, but there's no one you're saying it to. You just go in by yourself.
Uh-huh.
And inside the curtain, it's just you and your truth. And you have to be honest with yourself. You can't lie to yourself in that box.
Cool.
I don't know. That's all I got right now.
No, that's great.
I can already think how that won't work, but
no, it's fine.
I would love it if everyone just jerked off in that box. And you couldn't do anything about it. Be like, well, they're allowed to do whatever they want.
That's their truth.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of like youth group or like Sunday school-ish type thing? Any kind of like way to like reach out to kids?
No, there can be daycare for the toddlers and babies.
Okay.
So that the parents can get a break.
Yeah. Cause,
but we're not going to, I'm not going to brainwash these kids on behalf of the parents.
Yeah.
They do the teaching at home.
Well, that's another thing. It's like almost every religion has something for kids because it's like we can't let kids just do whatever the hell they want in a church because
they will
ruin it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. You know, yeah. It'd be more like daycare, productive life skills.
Mm.
We're not trying to brainwash them into the thing. It would just be like, learn how to like wash your hands. Learn how to not stick your hands in mud and put it in your mouth.
Yeah. Here's how to use Excel.
Get some administrative skills. Everyone in my church can type 90 words a minute.
That'd be more productive than a lot of Sunday schools.
Yeah.
Sure. Is there any kind of like mission work or service type aspect to this organization?
Absolutely not. No proselytizing, no conversion. If people like the church, they find out about it. And if your church just has to be good enough to attract people. And if it's not, then it's not going to last.
Yeah.
You don't go out and bully people into it.
Yeah.
So yeah, missionary work I would say is verboten. I'd say if people ask you about it, you're allowed to bring them. You should always routinely invite them to come to a service.
Mm, yeah, just like put out feelers.
Just if somebody says, hey, I heard you got a cool church.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, come on, I'll take you to a meeting.
Yeah.
Like newcomers always welcome.
Watch out for the booth.
Yeah, don't go in the booth. They don't clean the booth enough. But everything else is great, you know? Bring your kids. It's like daycare. You know, they teach your kids how to type. It's great.
Yeah.
And just as little money as possible accumulated.
You know,
church cannot accumulate money.
Finances really do is where it starts fucking up so many churches. It really does.
I can't believe I'm talking about AA so much. I've never talked about it in a podcast before. But another thing in meetings I found out is they have what's called, they don't accumulate money. I don't know if this is a universal thing, but in the meetings I went to, they have what's called a prudent reserve.
Mm.
You have whatever 2 months of expenses are.
Huh.
You can have that much money. And anything more than that, because you pass a hat every meeting.
Uh-huh.
So if for some reason you accumulate more than 2 months of your expenses, you have to give it away that day.
Wow.
So you never have more than 2 months of expenses.
I never knew that.
But so that means that there's never a ton of money to fight about.
Yeah.
What should we do with like the $1,000? There isn't $1,000. There's like $150.
Mm-hmm.
No fights.
Well, that's so like, even on such pretty micro scales of like very benevolent churches I've grown up in, it's like, once you get money involved, then it starts getting political of how to allocate it.
Yeah.
It always does. Like, well, do
money ruins everything. Money ruins your brain. Like it's crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
Jealousy comes out.
Uh-huh.
Being poor sucks. And like not having enough money is a for real bad thing. And if your church has more money than you, it's hard to be nice to your church.
Yeah. And especially when they ask you for money.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you know they're not, see, this is the thing. AA passes the hat. You don't have to. You give a buck or something like that. Just the resentment is not there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's for me in those types of situations.
Anybody can be a you. You do need an administrator. Oh fuck, maybe you don't. I'm going to say you probably do need someone to be like your priest or your like layperson of this church.
Uh-huh.
So you'll have to give them a stipend.
Yeah.
But it's a poor life.
Yeah, it's not.
You got to love it. Mm-hmm. You're not making a lot of money doing this.
Not a lot of status involved in it.
No, we can't have status.
Yeah.
See, that's why I'm also thinking, now, you know what? As long as I'm, now I'm worried about this like it's going to happen. I'm thinking too much about it. I'll just say, okay, no priests. You rotate the priest. Everyone takes turns being the priest. Any adult, man, woman, homosexual, there's no restrictions. I'll say over the age of 18, just so you can't have kids.
Uh-huh. Term limits.
Yeah, term limits of 3 months. Mm-hmm. You run the service for 3 months, and then mm-hmm. you're done. And you go to the next person. You can't do it more than once every, like, 3 years.
Yeah. That's the only way you can, like, take status out of the equation.
Yeah, so that no one is, like, the person at the front of the room.
Yeah.
Yeah, no status.
Status and money, they really do ruin so much shit.
What's worse than a rich priest? Like, that sucks. That's bad news.
I can't answer that question.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, and then finally, that's pretty much it for the bullet points. The hardest part, inevitably the hardest part, is coming up with some kind of title.
Yeah,
some
let's kind do of name. It. I'm going to say moderatism.
Okay.
Moderatism.
Cool. I mean, it makes sense.
Or moderatanity.
Moderatanity. I like that.
No, moderatism. Church of Moderatism.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that, you did it.
All right.
Moderatism is coming.
Yeah. Moderateism. Moderate. It's not a good word. It's a bad title already, I can tell you.
You know what?
But that's what it's going to be. Zoroasterism is hard to say, too, but it worked.
which word?
Zoroasterism.
Zoroasterism? I've never heard of that.
Oh, Zoroaster was like an apocalyptic prophet in like ancient times.
Oh, man.
Believed in an upcoming war of light versus dark. Not races, like yin and yang. Like,
okay, cool.
Like energies.
I can get hip to that.
People still believe in it. Yeah. There's still people who practice Zoroasterism, but not too much. But it used to be all the rage, like Egyptian times we're talking.
Cool.
Ancient Egypt. I'm still Egyptian times.
Definitely going to be Googling that.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
10 minutes.
Well, as soon as you do, you'll be like, oh, yeah, I knew about this. You definitely have heard about it.
Gotcha. Well, thanks so much for coming on. This was awesome.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was great. Bye. Well, that's the show, y'all. Once again, thanks so much to Will for coming out. Go right now to improvnonsense.com and buy that awesome book. If you like this show, again, Stitcher, iTunes, Facebook, search it, you'll find it. And I hope we all find what we're looking for. I love y'all so much. Bye.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?